Listener supported. WNYC Studios.
We all say when I get older, I will be stronger. They'll call me freedom, just like a waving flag. And then it goes back, and then it goes back, and then it goes back, and then it goes. When I get older, I will.
And some of you may remember that song, Waving Flag by Kanaan, as the unofficial song of the 2010 World Cup. It was everywhere that summer. FIFA, the world's governing body for soccer, conducted an investigation into widespread match fixing ahead of the 2010 tournament in South Africa. The results weren't pretty. It found huge international games were fixed by referees, awarding dubious penalty kicks, and the report detailed giant cash payouts, death threats, and other hallmarks of the criminal underground. So as this year's World Cup in Brazil is about to restart, this new report is a disturbing and depressing look at soccer's vulnerabilities and dark side from the lowest levels on up. Here with me now to discuss the FIFA report and his investigative reporting into corruption, which was published in an excellent two-part series this week in the New York Times, is Dr. Declan Hill, an academic and investigative journalist. Hi, Declan. Welcome to WNYC.
Hi, Brian. Thank you for having me on.
So explain to our listeners how match fixing works. Is it the refs making questionable calls and that's the extent of it?
No, absolutely not. And I think this is one where our listeners, if they're not aware of the story, kind of have to sit down, take a deep breath, and have a quantum leap in imagination. Here's the basics of this story. There is a group of about 20 or 30 match-fixing criminals based in Singapore, Malaysia, Indonesia, and Thailand. They've been traveling around the world for the last 20 years, since the early 90s, fixing major sporting events, large soccer games, tennis, cricket, various other sporting events around the world. They've been immensely successful. My first book, The Fix, Soccer and Organized Crime, told the story of my infiltrating that group of brokers wearing hidden cameras and recording devices and really kicked off a number of police investigations around the world. This latest revelation in the New York Times takes the story to another level. It's no longer dodgy referees, corrupt players, et cetera, et cetera. We now know from the secret internal FIFA investigation reports that it's the actual officials, the people organizing the sport, organizing the world's biggest tournament, some of them, not all of them, not even the majority, but some of them were actually working with the fixers.
Why?
For money. They were paid. And they simply weren't paid. You know, we're not talking, you know, the one or two occasional officials. In some cases, for example, in Zimbabwe, we have the internal reports showing that FIFA and various other investigators believe the entire soccer association in that country, the country's biggest soccer association, was run effectively by the fixers. They were paying the flights, they were paying the players, they were paying the coaches, they were paying the administrators, not every single one of them, but a great number of them. The same thing is happening in dozens of different countries around the world, and it really is a challenge for, quote, the international sporting community.
Maybe one relatable example would be the game you wrote about when South Africa beat Guatemala 5-0.
Yeah, absolutely. But I mean, really, Brian, there are hundreds of these cases. You know, the other one that Jeray Longman at the New York Times and myself were thinking about featuring was a very symbolic one, which is where the South African officials opened Soccer City at the edge of Johannesburg a couple of weeks before the World Cup. They opened it with a game. That game was refereed by a corrupted referee, or at least a referee provided by a match-fixing company. Three penalties were awarded, which is the, as our listeners know, is extremely rare in a soccer game. And this was opened by Nelson Mandela and really was the symbol of South African Renaissance. And, it was a corrupted game. And it really speaks to the nature, the systemic sense of corruption in the world sport.
So, listeners, if you want to kind of follow along, we have links on our page to Declan Hill's and Jeray Longman's two-part series on the Times website. And what you can link to is some really helpful interactive features that they developed, including scans of documents from FIFA's internal reports and videos of some of the questionable calls in the games that were almost definitely fixed. So if you want to see some of that, you can link from our page. Leave a comment in the meantime if you want to. Just let me tell people.
My book, which is The Insider's Guide to Match Fixing in Football, which is my doctoral thesis from the University of Oxford on this subject, and also The Fix, which tells the story of me breaking into that gang just before the 2006 World Cup, where they were approaching and infiltrating that tournament.
And if we don't have that link up, we'll get it up, I promise, in just a couple of minutes to Declan Hill's books on our page at WNYC.org. Click on Brian Lehr's show. And listeners, if anybody wants to call in on this, what a depressing thing to be talking about just days before this year's World Cup, 212-433-WNYC, 433-9692. And what does all this mean for the integrity of the game and for fans as people do get ready for Brazil?
I think it really poses a fundamental existential crisis, to international soccer. And I'm not throwing these words around lightly. And to the listeners who this is a new story to, it must seem that way. But when I say this, you know, we're talking about literally hundreds of players, officials, referees caught up in these kind of things, talking about dozens of police investigations around the world. And really, it's all linked to a multi-hundreds of billions of dollars sports gambling market based largely in Asia. This is now a globalized sports corruption, which really dwarfs the gambling world here in North America by several leagues.
Were there any qualifying matches on the way to this year's World Cup that struck you as suspicious?
There have been a number of games that have been mentioned in police reports. I don't actually speculate, and I know, again, to our listeners, this is going to sound weird after the what I'm saying, but I don't actually speculate on games that I think may have been fixed or may have not been. I rely only on serious judicial investigations when I make pronouncements about games that have been fixed.
So what's the most recent game or match that you write about?
I mean, there are so many. I mean, again, for followers of football, there have been Champions League games that have been fixed. There was an entire tournament, the Intertoto Cup, that was suspended. UEFA, the European Soccer Association, has recently revamped their entire friendly, international friendlies, because so many of them were being fixed. They've now set up a league to try and diminish that. There have been fixed matches in United States, played between the El Salvadorian national team and the American national team in Miami. The same thing happened when they played a friendly game against DC United. It just goes on and on and on.
Did the American national team or DC United in those instances either know about or participate in the corruption?
Thank you for pointing that out. No, there was, as far as we know to this point, there have been no American-based players, American national players that have been involved in the fixing. It was simply the key players on the El Salvadorian national team. However, as you may tell from my accent, I'm a Canadian, and our national soccer team back in the late 80s, there were four guys that sold, to our great shame and dishonor, it's kind of our White Sox scandal up here, they sold a game to the North Koreans, of all people, for $20,000 each player. And we have a league up here, Canadian Soccer League, which is kind of a third-tier soccer division for us, which has been really a byword in gambling circles for fixing.
We sell shadows in Central Park to the Chinese and the Russians, but I guess that's another story. on the penalty kicks, a lot of fans hate penalty kicks because they're easy goals. And now it seems giving out penalty kicks is a really easy way for refs to fix games. Should fans be skeptical if a game has a lot of penalties called in the box?
Look, I don't think we should be, it's not that kind of stuff. In my Oxford dissertation, I looked at that. I kind of did a Freakonomics or a Moneyball analysis of sports corruption and tried to figure out how referees fix games. And that was one of the key things that they did. It's just their easiest way of being able to manipulate a game successfully is just give a false penalty.
And listeners, we do now have links up to Declan Hill's books on our website, so if you want to go to those or see the documents and the videos of questionable plays referred to in his two-part New York Times series, you can follow along by going to WNYC.org and click on Brian Lehr's show. You would think that players, refs, and officials playing at least at the international level would be well enough compensated. Maybe that assumption is wrong. But why are these refs and players so vulnerable to bribes?
Well, I think this is where we're getting into the official complicity with this problem. Coming up in the world's biggest sporting tournament, World Cup 2014 in Brazil, which starts in a couple of weeks, there will be players running onto those soccer stadiums who will not be paid. They'll be ripped off by their own officials. FIFA gives each qualifying National Soccer Association $9 million. The breakdown is supposed to be $1 million goes to hotels, preparations for the tournament itself, and $8 million in recompense to the coaches, physios, players, etc. for those games. Quite often, that $8 million disappears in smoke, and the players do not receive their money. And this is a chronic problem. Again, I don't want to say it's the majority. I don't want to say it's every team, but it happens, enough times that nobody's surprised. So in 2006, when I was in Germany, the entire Togo national team went on strike right in the middle of the World Cup, saying, "Hey, we're not going to play our third place game because we don't trust our own officials to pay us.
Wow.
They're going to rip us off." And this is again and again. Nigeria, for example, in 2010. World Cup. They had similar issues. Jonathan Goodluck, the president of Nigeria, after they came home with their tails between their legs, said, "Okay, we want an official inquiry as to what happened at this World Cup. Why isn't a team like Nigeria, which is athletically fantastic, which has great players, did so badly?" And FIFA, the world governing body of soccer, stepped in and said, "Hey, you can't make those kind of inquiries."
Some of the stories in the articles are outrageous, like the Singapore syndicate that was involved in some of this, which you have them setting up an entire tournament solely for the sake of illegal gambling. You have them, is this the same thing, setting up a tournament in Turkey between the national teams of Estonia, Bulgaria, Bolivia, and Latvia, which was not televised, played in basically empty stadiums. They didn't sell any tickets, and all the goals were penalty kicks. What?
Yep. Yeah, that's why I said at the beginning of our interview, Brian, for listeners that are not aware of this story, it's one of those ones where you have to take a breath. Like, it's just so brazen. It's so outrageous. And it was a delight working with the New York Times editors. It's a delight working with Jure Longman. But we would stop every couple of days, and these very senior investigative journalists there would just be looking at me like, "Are you kidding? Like, you must be exaggerating, Hill." And I'd show them the documents, and they would say, "My goodness, all right, we got to put that in the paper." But it really is a paradigm shift in the level of corruption. This is not the occasional corrupted referee. These are, at times, entire tournaments staged for fixing.
I sense a person who really loves soccer beneath this muckraker. Now you know how much illegal fixing goes on behind the scenes. Has it ruined soccer for you?
In some ways, it has. It's very difficult for me now to watch a game wholly 100% as a fan. Quite often, I'm kind of sitting there with the cynical third eye of the investigative journalist, looking at a call, looking at something, and saying, what's going on here? And my goal now, my professional goal now, is I hope to be able to push with these stories, with these investigations, the efforts for reform. I think it's a great sport. It's a sport that's open to all body types. Tall, small, fat, thin. I think it's a sport that's open to people who are economically challenged as well as rich kids. I think it's a great sport. But it really does have systematic problems at this moment.
Well, we will have to leave it there for today. I've been speaking with Dr. Declan Hill. He's an expert on soccer match fixing, and he's just written a two-part series on widespread corruption at the highest levels of soccer in the New York Times. Again, we have links to some of his documents from the Times site and videos of questionable moments in soccer matches and links to his two related books. You want to shout out those titles again because I don't have them in front of me?
Of course. One is called The Fix, Soccer and Organized Crime, which is the inside story of my infiltrating the gang before the 2006 World Cup. And the other one is The Insider's Guide to Match Fixing. That's more of an economics, kind of a money ball approach to soccer corruption. So analyzing it statistically, how it goes ahead and what they're doing.
You going to Brazil?
I may do. I'm still following the investigation, so I may be there.
Thanks a lot for talking it through with us.
Brian, thank you so much for featuring this important story.
Brian Lehrer, WNYC.